Despite the bans, this industry continues to grow and is also one of the few that exports services to other countries. Based on the Association of Iranian Exports of Technical and Engineering Services, Iran currently has the potential to export engineering services worth $40 billion annually. The country already exports these services to countries around the Caspian Sea, its bordering neighbors, South and Central America, North Africa, and South Asia. Some construction projects include sewage treatment plants, dams, and energy plants. According to the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, Iran is self-sufficient in construction material production. Steel, glass, and cement are abundantly produced in the country. Moreover, the surplus of these items is exported to countries worldwide. Government officials say they have plans to expand exports to Iran's trade partners, including China and Russia. For example, the Ministry of Industry, Mine and Trade says it plans to sell upwards of $3 billion worth of construction materials to Russia alone. As a whole, the government views the construction sector as a feasible alternative for generating foreign revenues and diversifying the country's economy away from oil profits. All right, now it's time to check out this week's special feature of Bazaar. So let's see where Sarah has been this past week.
In an ever-increasing technology-driven world, city streets are becoming more and more congested than ever before, while connected and autonomous technologies in vehicles are also on the rise. Such safety concerns pose a significant challenge for city planners and traffic engineers to improve mobility, safety, and efficient use of roadways now and in the future. When you are driving to work, or especially going on a road trip, you need to be fully alert to avoid the hidden cameras all across the road from catching you or costing you a damage. Well, sometimes this can be really irritating. But have you ever thought of the significant impacts they have in the most challenging situations? Today, we decided to take you to a company active in the field of intelligent transportation system in Shadif University of Technology. Let's go check it out. With creating intelligent transportation systems, the research and development team of the students in Sharif University of Technology has created a smart traffic software for processing related information. These smart systems are mounted beside or over the roads to detect motoring offenses, including speeding, vehicles going through a red traffic light, vehicles going through a toll booth without paying, or for recording vehicles inside a congestion charge area. All these violations are detected 24/7 using traffic data analysis system.
We as Kanek Group started to work around 10 years ago here in Electronic Research Institute in Sharif University of Technology. Back then, our main expertise was focused on image processing and embedded systems and also IoT devices for smart cities and buildings. Our products are all knowledge-based and divide into three main categories. The first one is machine vision and embedded systems. The other part of the products are based on IoT or Internet of Things products. And the third one is the big data analysis and data mining. These products are all implemented on a secure and highly customized Linux operating system. Another line of our products are based on IoT devices, such as the smart gateways and actuators. We have exported these products to two foreign countries, and also the third line of our products are based on data mining and big data analysis. These softwares and products are mainly used in road maintenance and transportation organization and also some major municipality offices. These softwares helps a lot in extracting useful patterns out of millions and billions data in traffic control centers and help managers and also managers and experts in traffic control centers to extract practical and beneficial data from these smart cameras or sensors throughout the city.
As I mentioned earlier, this intelligent software was created for the smart camera system. When it comes to cameras, we have various kinds of traffic enforcement cameras, such as speed violation detection camera, red light camera, road safety camera, and so many more for plate detection. But that's not all. This company also creates IoT devices or Internet of Things. These are intelligent gateway camera systems for buildings and image processing with the aim of providing a better living environment for people and reducing energy consumption. All right, now it's time to take a closer look at the smart camera system and see how it works. There are thousands of smart camera systems all across the country that actually function with the software created in this company. Now, let's take a look at one of the smart camera systems created in this company. Well, just like human, this smart system is created and is made of eyes, and if we delve inside, it's also made of a powerful brain. Well, the eye of this system is the industrial camera, which is created in different versions depending on the geographic location of the camera. For example, the one we have here has been created with a hardware design that protects against a heat wave. Anyway, this camera captures the images from the front side of this smart system and sends these images to the processing board, which functions as the brain part of this smart system. And finally, the data is transmitted from the intelligent software of the smart system to the traffic control centers all across the city.
The Connect Group was founded in some 8 years ago, I think. And the main focus of the group was on cutting edge smart technologies. For example, in machine vision, machine learning, artificial intelligence, data analytics, Internet of Things, and stuff like that. Later on, we use these technologies in more specific areas, for example, in intelligent transportation systems and various aspects of smart cities, like smart buildings, smart automation, and we have other countries around us that they are interested in some of our products. Our main goal for the future is to actually connect all the intelligent aspects of the city together. For example, if you have something smart in the in a villa or in an apartment, we connect it to the road, we connect it to the work office, and all these things all together to for one brain actually to decide for the optimization and improvement of several aspects of the these systems.
Employing the latest smart technologies as well as artificial intelligence, this company focuses on smart city and smart buildings, and ultimately, it aims at city management without human involvement. Presently, their products are available in almost 17 provinces in Iran. Traffic technologies continue to evolve and scale into solutions in mega cities. Finally, this paves the way to optimizing traffic flow and improving efficiency and safety on the roads. Well, there is no way to violate the traffic rules. The latest technologies in the modern world today, including the smart camera system, can detect and improve the wrong behaviors of drivers in the society. And by the end of the day, they can create a smarter, safer, and more sustainable transportation ecosystem. I've been Sarah Dema, and I'll see you next time.
We are getting close to the end of the program, but Before we go, let's check out some news and trends in the construction industry and beyond. Iran is known for its creative experts in the field of engineering. So it is no surprise that last year the country exported technical and engineering services valued at nearly $2 billion. That's based on Iran's Trade Promotion Organization. These services were sent to countries in Southeast Asia, North Africa, and neighboring regions. For example, 57 major infrastructural projects were carried out by dozens of Iranian companies in Iraq alone. Furthermore, the organization says with more planning and resources, the country can quickly increase exports of technical and engineering services to $20 million annually. In the last 15 years, Iran has taken on some 900 construction projects in 21 countries worth $32 billion. Unconventional use of construction material. An Iranian architect has transformed a widely used construction material into a unique form of window. It is a type of spectacled brick that is a solid block with a circular aperture at its core which filters in the light. The architect says the high density of buildings and city regulations in Tehran has limited sunlight exposure in office and commercial buildings. The developer explains the special brick in this project allows sunlight penetration even in parts of the building where windows are not permitted by city codes. Additionally, these unique windows can be adjusted to closed or open positions to optimize daylight exposure. The advantage of this brick is that it can absorb less air pollution and help filter out the noise from the motorways. Increasing market reach. And let's conclude with Iran's efforts to expand its market reach and trade of goods with its neighbors. The country is organizing 6 exhibitions in the Qatari capital, Doha, that will be held during this year's FIFA World Cup event. 5 exhibitions will introduce Iranian handcrafts, such as hand-woven carpets, home decorations, and much more. Additionally, 1 will be held for construction materials and technical engineering services. This is significant for increasing bilateral relations and trade between the two nations. Government officials also say a direct shipping line has been launched between Iran and Qatar to help with the transportation and distribution of goods. That wraps up our program for today. Also, if you have a topic that you're interested in, you can send us your thoughts and suggestions via email. We always enjoy hearing from you. On behalf of the entire team, thank you for tuning in and take care. And bye-bye.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
New data shows that Eurozone is facing contraction. According to this data, the bloc's manufacturing and services have declined further. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Thank you. RT wrote, private sector activity in the Eurozone is continuing to shrink, suggesting the area's economy will likely contract in the third quarter as the downturn in manufacturing has deepened. Data compiled by S&P Global revealed recently. HCOB's Flash Composite Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, for the bloc, a measure reflecting overall economic health, rose slightly to 47.1 in September from August 33-month low of 46.7. However, economists warn that the reading is clearly below the 50 level. That indicates a contraction, adding that the Eurozone will not return to growth anytime soon. The numbers for PMI services in the euro area paint a grim picture, according to Cyrus Dola Rubia, chief economist at Hamburg Commercial Bank. We expect the eurozone to enter a contraction in the third quarter, he said, adding, our now cast, which incorporates the PMI indices, points to a drop of 0.4% compared to the second quarter. Output in the eurozone has been shrinking for four consecutive months, led by a deepening decline in manufacturing, data shows. Dola Rubia said the main drag continues to come from manufacturing, where the order situation deteriorated further. September's PMI readings were negative for both manufacturing, which has been below 50 for 15 months, and services, according to the latest figures. The EU's largest economies, Germany and France, were the main drivers of the extended downturn in the euro area's business activity, despite expectations of some stabilization, S&P Global said. According to the Business Times, European shares closed lower on Friday, September 22nd, logging sharp weekly losses as investors grappled with the prospects of global interest rates remaining elevated for longer. The pan-European Stoxx 600 index fell 0.3%, touching its lowest in more than a week, with the construction and materials sector amongst the top decliners, down 1%. Europe's benchmark stock index notched a weekly decline of 1.9% as investors turned risk-averse after major central banks across the world, including the U.S. Federal Reserve and the Bank of England, hinted at keeping borrowing costs high for longer than expected. Jitters about an economic downturn in the eurozone persisted after preliminary data showed a contraction in economic activity in France and Germany, while a reading of the broader bloc showed the continental economy is likely to contract this quarter and won't return to growth anytime soon. Economist at HSBC said in a note, clearly, the medicine is working. Higher rates are starting to feed through to the economy. With limited fear of a recession, at least of a major one, and resurgent energy prices, we think that, for now, the European Central Bank will remain more focused on tackling inflation, maintaining its hawkish bias. Reuters, in a last month report, had said The downturn in Eurozone business activity worsened more than initially thought in July, as the slump in manufacturing was accompanied by a further slowing of growth in the bloc's dominant services industry, and that was according to a survey. HCOB's final Composite Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, compiled by S&P Global and seen as a good gauge of overall economic health, dropped to an 8-month low of 48.6 in July from June's 49.9. That was below the 50 mark, separating growth from contraction for a second straight month and shy of a preliminary estimate for 48.9. Francisca Palmas, senior Europe economist at Capital Economics, said the final Eurozone PMIs confirmed that economic conditions deteriorated in July, with the composite index consistent with GDP declining slightly. Reuters added, the recent manufacturing PMI showed factory activity across the Eurozone contracted in July at the fastest pace since COVID-19 was cementing its grip on the world, and the recent services PMI showed a slowing growth in the industry. Inflation has remained stubbornly high in the EU, despite aggressive tightening of monetary policy. The ECB raised interest rates for the 9th consecutive time, but raised the possibility of a pause in September as inflation pressures show tentative signs of easing and recession worries mount.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu on Israel-Saudi normalization. And here he is.
I think that under your leadership, Mr. President, we can forge a historic peace between Israel and Saudi Arabia.
The Saudi Crown Prince seems to echo the same sentiment.
Every day we get closer. It seems it's for the first time a real one, serious. We're going to see how it goes.
Two problems here. First, just days ago, it was said that Saudi Arabia had abandoned any normalization talks with Israel, which was reported widely. Yet when the Saudi Crown Prince was asked about it, he said,
"There were reports that you had suspended talks."
No, that's not true.
The Saudi Crown Prince, however, has said the issue of Palestine is of utmost importance.
For us, the Palestinian issue is very important. We need to solve that part.
Question is, how important? Is it a non-negotiable, or is it open for negotiations?
We have a good negotiation. Let's continue.
Now comes the Saudi foreign minister, who had this to say about it at the UNGA podium. To paraphrase his statement, peace that allows Palestinian people to have an independent state without Quds as its capital. If that's the case, Israel-Saudi reconciliation is a non-starter. There's no way that neither the Israeli Prime Minister nor his far-right extreme fascist cabinet would agree to it. So what is the deal? Why is Saudi Arabia wasting time talking to Israel? How can Netanyahu say that he cares about the Palestinian cause, yet say this about their position?
But I also believe that we must not give the Palestinians a veto over new peace treaties with Arab states.
And while talking about the importance of Palestinians, his forces murdering Palestinians. Just today, two shot in the head, bulldozing their homes and detaining them. Is Saudi Arabia serious that it may reconcile with this apartheid regime?
Credible nuclear threat.
The Israeli Prime Minister was up to his old antics at the UNGA podium, using his props to make a point, a red marker and a piece of cardboard.
Today I bring this marker to show a great blessing, the blessing of a new Middle East.
This new Middle East that he talks about, referred to by Iran as West Asia, has already happened. It's called the Iran-Saudi reconciliation. Further proof of that, Iran's foreign minister hooking up with the Saudi FM in New York on the sidelines of the UNGA, where there was talk about a comprehensive cooperation agreement with Riyadh. But there's no denying there is a conflict of interest when it comes to Saudi-Iran reconciliation versus a possible Saudi detente with Israel in more ways than one. And what about the U.S. and the U.S. President Joe Biden, whose hand the Saudi Crown Prince has rejected on more than one occasion? The U.S. has been more cautious than the upbeat assessment of Israel, saying things like a breakthrough is far away and steep obstacles remain. But perhaps a point overlooked by the media may provide a window into what the real intentions of the U.S. is. One of the reasons behind the U.S. enthusiasm behind denormalization, countering China's inroads in the Persian Gulf. This was a clear reference to China's Belt and Road Initiative, a stance supported by the Israeli Prime Minister.
That great promise in the G20 meeting that participated and led, you spoke about an economic corridor that would link Asia, the Middle East, and Europe together. And such a corridor will make Israel a very important hub on a highway of unprecedented prosperity.
The U.S. and Israel, through the trade route, as shown here, want to stand up to China's One Belt, One Road initiative. And as the saying goes, kill two birds with one stone through this strategy. But will it work? Consider this. China is Saudi Arabia's number one oil customer. Saudi Arabia has just become a new BRICS member. Saudi Arabia has reconciled with Iran, with many PGCC Persian Gulf countries to have done the same or are in the process of doing that with Iran. That's called the New World Order. It would be wiser for Netanyahu to reconcile with his own people, who have protested for over 38 weeks, before aspiring to reconcile with Saudi Arabia. As the crisis in Europe begins to deepen, there are concerns in Germany that the country will become the continent's, quote, sick man. Deutsche Bank CEO Christian Suing said Germany will become the sick man of Europe if structural issues are not addressed immediately. He said, quote, it is also true that there are structural weaknesses that hold back our economy and prevent it from developing its great potential. We will become the sick man of Europe if we do not address these structural problems now. The Deutsche Bank CEO said the biggest task lies with banks. Suing also listed other issues that Germany is facing. They include high and unpredictable energy costs, slow internet connections, outdated rail networks, digitalization backlogs, a lack of skilled workers, excessive bureaucracy, and long approval procedures. The term sick man of Europe was first used to describe Europe's largest economy in 1998.
The European economy is doing better than the German economy. Germany is the sick man of Europe in the moment. There has been a decline in manufacturing output trend-wise since 2018. It's not a short-term phenomenon. And that has to do with the automobile industry, which is the heart of the German industry, and many things hinge on that. So we are on a declining trend. And then comes the war. Putin cut off the gas. Germany shut off deliberately its nuclear power plants. And one wonders where the energy should come from.
As it tried to grapple with the challenges of the post-reunification environment, the EU's largest economy continues to grapple with challenges in its manufacturing sector as it suffers from higher energy costs. It officially slipped into a technical recession in the first quarter of the year as GDP growth was revised from zero to negative 0.3%. The Bundesbank announced that the economy was likely to shrink this quarter thanks to slow private consumption and the increasing weakness of the industry. Germany's energy-intensive sectors, particularly manufacturing and automotive production, have borne the brunt of the disruption of its gas supplies from Russia. These industries constitute the bedrock of Germany's economic might, and any disruption in their operations has far-reaching consequences. Some firms are contemplating relocating their production facilities to more energy-stable regions.
Germany has a big problem with, or had already a big problem with skilled labor, but now it's a shortage of overall labor, even unskilled labor. And this has started in the pandemic when many people who were working in low-paid jobs, they found different jobs in different industries that rose during the pandemic, but they are now missing in other jobs. And some people also left Germany. Others came, but they were not so well integrated into the labor market. So in general, we have this shortage of labor in Germany, and we also have problems with supply chains. There were lots of disruptions. There are, of course, the war in Ukraine.
Earlier in September, a report by Spanish daily El País cited analysts who believe that Germany is staring at the end of its economic model. According to experts, the German model hinges on three ingredients, which include cost competitiveness, technological leadership in its industry, and geopolitical stability. But following the breakout of the war in Ukraine, all these factors are now gone. The cutoff of Russian gas, which accounted for more than 50% of the gas consumed in Germany, has impacted the electro-intensive industry, forcing businesses to restructure their business and to close plants. Meanwhile, the IFO business climate indicator for Germany declined for the fourth consecutive month to 85.7 in August 2023, reaching the lowest level since October 2022.
But what is true is that we are currently economically not in a good shape. We are probably in a recession, going into a deeper recession. And there are a lot of worries about the future, the economic future, and also there's a lot of uncertainty. And one thing in Germany is the inflation, rising prices has always been a big issue in the German history and back in the minds of the people. And so I think the rise in inflation in the recent years is also something which is leading to these results.
The significant deterioration in business morale suggests that Europe's largest economy has not yet overcome its challenges. Berlin's chances of reversing the situation in the short term remain slim, and the political landscape, a three-party coalition in government, does not make it any easier. The broader repercussions of Germany's deindustrialization and its aging workforce are looming, casting a shadow over the European Union's economic strength and competitiveness. Meanwhile, Berlin is planning to restore a 19% sales tax on gas and heat deliveries from the end of this year. The move will effectively end the current discount rate 3 months earlier than planned. The value-added tax on natural gas was cut from 19% to 7% last October to ease the pressure on consumers amid soaring energy costs. A recent report by the German economy minister projected that gas prices in the EU's largest economy are likely to soar and remain high until at least 2027, unless additional emergency measures are taken. Thousands of United Auto Workers are officially on a strike after three Detroit automakers failed to reach an agreement with the union.
What appears that now is going to happen is the UAW is planning targeted strikes across all three companies, so striking at just specific plants.
We're going to get to that story soon. But did you know that the U.S. is experiencing strikes in other sectors as well? From UPS, the carrier service, to Starbucks, the coffee chain,
we pull the shots.
We call the shots.
Workers at many U.S. companies are taking to the streets. In short, they are fighting for better pay and improved working conditions.
We have hotel workers on strike across the region, everywhere from the L.A. Grand, which joined the strike this morning, J.W. Marriott, Ritz-Carlton.
We have a very weak labor law. There are a lot of aspects of our economy and our politics that concentrate a lot of power in the hands of corporations.
And there may be more strikes to come. UPS employees started striking before reaching a deal. That would have involved some 340,000 workers. Close to 3,000 Starbucks workers protested what they called unfair labor practices. 1,400 members of the United Electrical Workers went on a strike after rejecting the company's contract offer. 6,000 workers at Boeing's Aerosystems went on a strike, also rejecting the company's contract offer. Add to that 80 Amazon drivers who protested unfair labor practices. And McDonald's employees in California went on a strike over paid sick leave. Well, it becomes evident how much of a common occurrence these strikes are. And we can't forget Hollywood. General Motors, Ford Motor Company, and Chrysler, well-known names in the car industry, brand names with record incomes, but not so for the average worker.
They should be paid more. The corporation is making billions of dollars. And these people have been with them and the cost of living and stuff like that. They've been with this company 20, 30 years.
Tens and thousands of the United Auto Workers are officially on a strike. The three Detroit automakers have failed to reach an agreement with the union, which represents about 146,000 workers. One major issue on the table, workers' pay. The union has proposed 40% hourly pay increases over the next 4 years. The average U.S. auto worker on a manufacturing production line earns about $28 per hour as of August. That's up only $1 from the previous year. The problem began on an agreement that the auto workers made with the government, which bailed out the big three automakers. The problem is, the workers hired in 2007 or earlier earned an average of $33 per hour, but the ones hired after 2007 earn only $17 an hour. Why? Because this agreement was made as a goodwill gesture to help the automakers get back on their feet after the crisis. But now auto workers' hourly earnings have fallen 19.3% since 2007. And that is not fair as they see it. Even the U.S. politicians see it that way, like Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
The fight you are waging here is not just about decent wages and working conditions and pensions in the automobile industry. It is a fight to take on corporate greed and tell the people on top this country belongs to all of us, not just a few.
But strikes in the U.S. are happening at a more frequent pace compared to previous years. There were 424 work stoppages in 2022, including 417 strikes and 7 lockouts. Work stoppages increased by 52% from 2021 to 2022. The number of workers involved in work stoppages increased by 60% from 2021 to 2022. The number of striking workers as a consequence saw an increase. Since the year 2021, the numbers have been rising steadily, with 650,000 to have threatened to go on a strike so far this year. The strikes point to a deeper problem within the U.S. economy. Things are not that rosy when it comes to Americans' income and economic well-being. For example, homelessness has been on the rise in several states, most notably California, and also in New York City.
The unhoused population has exploded with the addition of the new arrivals. For example, here at St. Bartholomew's Church, where we start serving, we're seeing on average anywhere from 250 to 275 people, more or less regularly. Once the new arrivals started coming, our numbers got up over 400 people.
choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A new survey has found that Britain's poorest families have endured a frightening collapse in their living standards over the past year as a result of soaring energy and food costs. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British public broadcaster, the ITV television network, has covered this story and tells us more. According to a charity survey, more than 120,000 children in the United Kingdom are living in the most extreme form of poverty. The survey suggested the situation has worsened since last year. A rise in levels of poverty has been described as stark and worrying by Buttle UK, which works with children and young people in crisis. Its survey of 1,240 frontline professionals found that some 60% of children they work with were living in destitution, up from 45% reported the previous year and 36% in 2021. The charity, which published its annual State of Child Poverty report on Friday, 18th of August, stated, "By extension, the families our frontline workers are supporting includes approximately 122,000 children living in destitution." It added, "The year-on-year change between the last three surveys cohorts dramatically illustrates the progressively worsening circumstances for British children in poverty." The charity described the term destitution as one describing the absolute lowest standard of living any adult, child or young person can experience, adding that the lived reality is degrading and unsustainable. Social change organisation, the Joseph Rantree Foundation, defines destitution as meaning someone is going without the essentials needed to eat, to stay warm and dry, and keep clean. The charity report said someone is considered destitute if they have gone without at least two of the following in the past month: shelter, food, lighting, heat, clothing, and basic toiletries. Buttle's chief executive, Joseph House, said the report demonstrates the catastrophic impact of the pandemic and the cost of living crisis. The survey was open to a network frontline workers between April and May and had 1,240 responses from across England, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales. Some 49% said they were not able to afford their rent or equivalent. Some frontline workers reported children going to school hungry, being unable to concentrate or participate in classes, and some refusing to attend if they are noted to be different, hungry, dirty, smelly, or tired. British newspaper The Morning Star has also covered the same story and tells us more. Recently, UK's Education Secretary Gillian Keegan said pupil absences were at crisis level as she endorsed headteachers driving children to school if necessary. Figures released earlier this year showed that around 125,000 school pupils last year were severely absent, effectively meaning they were absent more often than they were in classrooms. But the UK, which works with children and young people in crisis, has repeatedly calls made by other organisations for the government to lift the two-child universal credit limit, which it says significantly reduces household income and well-being. It also backed calls to introduce an essential guarantee so that basic rate of universal credit at least covers the cost of life's essentials, with support never being pulled below that level, and urged the appointment of a dedicated cabinet minister for children and young people. Of the report's findings, Buttle's chief executive, Joseph Howes, said, "More and more children are having to go without food, and the situation these challenges are creating are preventing them from having any chance of reaching their potential at school. The increase in children and young people living in destitution is stark and worrying." She added, "A child poverty strategy is needed to support in the longer term, but changes can be made now to pull hundreds of thousands of children out from the destructive grip of poverty." She added, "We urge the government to act now and support struggling families by lifting the two-child universal credit limit and introducing an essentials guarantee, ensuring benefits always cover the basic essentials." While there is currently a Minister for Children, Families and Wellbeing, the charity said it wants to see a cabinet-level minister who can provide cross-government coordination and leadership for children, including leading on a new child poverty strategy. The Scottish broadcaster STV has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to new research, nearly one in four children in Scotland are living in poverty, as campaigners call for action on unacceptably high rates. A total of 101 organisations under the End Child Poverty Coalition say all levels of government in the United Kingdom must act on the findings. According to research by Loughborough University, despite Scottish Government targets, just four local authority areas in Scotland had child poverty rates below 18% in 2021-2022. The city of Glasgow, North Ayrshire and Clackmanshire had the highest child poverty rates in Scotland, with 32%, 29% and 28.3% respectively. The statistics were calculated based on the number of children who live in a household with a median income below 60% after housing costs are removed. Child poverty rates across Scotland suggest nearly one in four children, or 24% of Scottish children, are living in poverty. John Dickey, director of the Child Poverty Action Group, made a number of recommendations to national and local governments on behalf of the End Child Poverty Coalition. The recommendations include urging the British government to scrap the two-child benefit limit, where families with additional children born after April of 2017 cannot access further financial aid, while the Scottish government should do more to mitigate the policy. The rollout of the Scottish child payment of £25 for eligible children under the age of 16 was praised by campaigners. However, they argued that ministers need to increase its value. John Dickey, director of Child Poverty Action Group, said, "These latest statistics are a stark reminder that child poverty remains unacceptably high across the United Kingdom, including in every local authority area in Scotland." John Dickey added, "It's now absolutely vital that the British government scraps the poverty-creating policies like the two-child limit." He said, "Here in Scotland, the Scottish child payment is already making a big difference to struggling families, but nearly one in four children still face this deep injustice, and further effort is now needed to ensure Scotland's upcoming child poverty targets are met." John Dickey added, "The First Minister has committed to use devolved powers to the absolute maximum effect, so his government must now do the right thing and go further to both increase the value of the Scottish child payment and put in place additional payments for families affected by the two-child limit. He also called for local government in Scotland to double down on child poverty action plans by putting low-income families at the centre of decision-making. Meanwhile, according to research by a children's charity, disabled British children are being forced to go without electricity or heating because their families are being disproportionately harmed by the cost of living crisis. The Childhood Trust says the rising cost of energy bills and other inflation was affecting the families of children in the United Kingdom with special educational needs and disabilities, even more than their mainstream counterparts.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Khamenei, leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the representatives of the people from the provinces of Sistan and Baluchistan and Fars Khorasan. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 11, 2023. I will never forget the help I received from the Sunni scholars of Baluchistan during that trip. Let me mention something in passing here, which is in fact a fundamental important point. Our officials should appreciate these people and serve them. Of course, a lot of work and services have been done in Sistan and Baluchistan. The Baluchistan you see today is not the Baluchistan of the time of Taghut Pahlavi period. I saw the condition it was in back then. The people had nothing. Work began in this region from the very first days after the revolution. Work was done there, in Zabol and other regions of the province. Work is being done there today as well. This work should continue vigorously. The issue of the railway line is very important. It is very important for the north and southeast of the country to be connected by a railway. It is important for the province, the provinces in between, and for the country itself. The issue of Zabol's water is very important as well. All the work and all the various ways must be pursued in order to provide water, which is one of the people's rights, and God willing, this work will be done. Much work has already been done, but there is still much work to be done.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
If administrations had acted upon the resolutions that were passed in 2004 when I came to Baluchistan, the province would look different today. Some administrations were lethargic and neglected this matter. Thank God the administration is busy today and it is working hard. I am hopeful and God willing this hope will come to fruition. So these were some issues related to this region. There is a general matter that concerns everyone. I myself, the entire Iranian nation, and our officials should pay attention to this. What is this matter? I would especially like the young people to pay attention to this point. When major transformations take place or begin in the world, the nations and officials of countries have a duty to be much more vigilant. If they have this kind of vigilance, nations will not be deceived, and they will not be forced to act against their own interest. If they do not have this kind of vigilance, and if they are neglectful, long-term harm will be inflicted on nations.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The Muslim world has dealt with its fair share of natural disasters over the years, but few would have expected to see the sheer scope of devastation caused by a week of horror across North Africa. Earthquakes, floods, and natural wildfires consuming everything in their path and laying waste to the environment around them.
The first disaster was the horrific earthquake that hit Morocco, a 6.8 magnitude quake which struck at around 11 p.m. local time on the 8th of September. Aftershocks followed on Wednesday the 13th, temporarily hampering rescue efforts there. At least 2,800 people were killed and over 300,000 people remain affected. 1 week on and the humanitarian needs remain incredibly great there. Then there was Storm Daniel, which crashed down on Libya